We have been considering John's first two epistles, and now we turn to his third letter. The subject of 1 John is the family. In 2 John, it is the home. But in 3 John, it's the church, and it's a description of certain individuals associated with its work. The background to John's second and third epistles was the visits of itinerant evangelists moving around the churches with the gospel and ministry. John was one of their number. They were pioneers. Three things are said about them. First, there are two classes, the brethren and strangers. The name brethren occurs three times in verses 3, 5, and 10. These were well known. But there were strangers who had never been there before. Secondly, they went forth for the sake of the name, verse 7. Thirdly, they took nothing of the Gentiles, verse 7. That is, they did not get their material support from unbelieving heathen. Thus we get their character, motive, and their attitude to material things. From the Gentiles they took nothing. From some Christians they received nothing. But through exercised, hospitable men like Gaius, their needs were fully met. They lacked nothing. The instructions in 2 and 3 John have to do with how they should be treated. We learn of truth and love in relation to hospitality. 2 John tells us who we must not receive, while 3 John instructs us who we must receive. To show hospitality to total strangers is the highest form of hospitality. There is a threefold instruction on how to treat these servants of Christ. First, we are to receive them, verse 8. Secondly, in so doing, we are fellow helpers with the truth, verse 8. Thirdly, we are to bring them forward on their journey in a manner worthy of God, verse 6. This would involve providing the means to go from one place to another, furnishing them with their travel expenses. This letter is a practical commentary on the attitude of three individuals to this work and to the itinerant preachers. They present three character sketches in impressive detail. First, there is Gaius. His name means off the earth, but he had a heavenly disposition. In this short letter, John calls him beloved, or well-beloved, four times, in verses 1, 2, 5, and 11. Four things are said about him. First, in relation to himself. John prays that he might prosper and be in health, even as his soul prospereth, verse 2. Apparently, like many of God's choice saints, he had a fragrant and mature spirit in a weak, frail body. Second, his relation to the truth. The truth dwelter was enshrined in him, and he walked in the truth. The word walked indicates the visible manifestation of the state of his soul. It was seen in his manner of life. In John's epistles, the truth is the apostolic doctrine as opposed to the Gnostic heresy. Gaius was a well-balanced Christian. He walked in the truth and practiced it in love. Creed and conduct went together. Third, his relation to the church. The preaching brethren bore witness to his love before the church. He had the confidence and affection of his brethren. Fourthly, his relation to the itinerant preachers. We don't know whether Gaius was a preacher or a teacher himself, but he dedicated himself to showing hospitality to the servants of Christ. This gives us some insight into how the work of evangelization was supported and sustained in the early days of the church. The servants went forth, taking nothing of the Gentiles, but they were supported and shown hospitality by men like Gaius. He not only took them into his home, but sent them on in a manner worthy of God. He did it not only to those he knew, but also to those he had never seen before. John Bunyan has a nice comment on this. He says, Gaius told Mr. Greatheart when he asked for his bill that he boarded Pilgrims by the Year and looked for his pay at the return of the Good Samaritan. Gaius had a warm heart and a weak body. As his name indicates, he was a man of earth, a very human, humble type, but he had the spirit of the heavenly man. The second man is Diotrephes. John says, I wrote unto the church, but Diotrephes, who loves to have the preeminence among them, receiveth us not. Wherefore, if I come, I will remember his deeds which he doeth, prating against us with malicious words. And not content therewith, neither doth he himself receive the brethren, and forbiddeth them that would, and casteth them out of the church. Verses 9-10. Note three things about him. First, what he thinks of himself. He loves to have the preeminence. The word preeminence occurs again in Colossians 1:18 about our Lord, that in all things he might have the preeminence. Actually, Diotrephes was usurping the place of Christ in the church. Second, his relation to John. John was the last survivor of the apostolic band and the disciple whom Jesus loved. Yet here was a man who refused to receive him. Was he offended because John had written to the church and not to him? Gaius was in the church, but he doesn't seem to have seen the letter. Was it put in the waste paper basket? Here is the seed of the spirit of hierarchy which developed later, the centralization of authority in one man. It is the opposite of the spirit of the upper room, where the Lord taught his disciples to put on the slave apron and wash one another's feet. The word prating means literally to boil over, to talk nonsense. Maliciousness is not just foolish talk, but wicked and vicious slander. Third, his attitude to the brethren. He refused reception to the missionaries, forbade those that would have received them, and excommunicated them from the church. Verse 10. The words, casteth them out, are very strong. Literally, he threw them out. His self-will is seen in that he not only refuses the brethren himself, but imposes his will on others. But John is not afraid of him. He says, wherefore, if I come, I will remember his deeds which he doeth. Verse 10. He will deal with him in due time. In verse 11, he addresses Gaius again, and for the fourth time calls him beloved. He gives the spiritual tests of good and evil. He that doeth good is of God, but he that doeth evil hath not seen God. The inference is that conduct is the criterion of the true Christian. Diotrephes can be judged by that standard. The third man whom John mentions is Demetrius. He is a type of the itinerant missionary of which the epistle speaks. John's commendation shows that he is apparently one of the strangers. Note the threefold testimony to this servant of Christ. First, he has the testimony of all men. There is something wrong if a preacher has a bad reputation in the world. The elder must have a good report of them that are without, lest he fall into reproach and the snare of the devil. 1 Timothy 3:7. Then he had the witness of the truth itself, that is, his ministry of it. It had a good rattle. Spiritual believers size a man up as soon as he opens his mouth. Even searching ministry, given in a gracious manner, commends itself. It exalts Christ and builds up the saints. It is not only that he bore witness to the truth, but the truth bore witness to him. Demetrius was not the standard by which the truth was tested, but the truth was the standard by which he was tested, and having been so tested, he stood approved. The truth he professed was embodied in him. His life closely conformed to it. He practiced what he preached. Finally, John says, "We also bear witness." That is, John and his fellow workers. Demetrius had the confidence and commendation of his brethren. Thus, the main thrust of this short epistle is instruction how we should act toward the servants of Christ who are building up the Church of God today.